everybody. This is Armand Demel with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI. 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And I'm very, very happy to have with us in the studio today, Claudia Fox. Claudia, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you, Armand. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Claudia brings to our attention, or Claudia comes to my attention because she's doing workshops for people on job finding. So as I did a little more examination, I found out that Claudia is someone who teaches people how to become, or how to lead themselves more towards success. And the way that that Claudia does it is certainly is reflected in the way that she succeeded herself. She's become a major, well, she's been successful, or is successful. So, Claudia, let's talk specifically about success. When a person is trying to examine how do they get further, what does the word success mean? Mm-hmm. Does it mean I'm happy with my job, or does it mean I'm making a lot of money, or does it mean?
Well, success is different to different people. So I think everyone would have to define success for themselves. To me, a success was being happy at what I do and making money. But there are plenty of people who are doormen and are very happy with their jobs and may not make a lot of money, but just love with coming to work every day. So I think that's probably the first step, is to define success to oneself.
Very often people define success as being able to rise above, you know, and it's like I'm a struggler, and all I want to do is rise above. So there's kind of this neurotic push to get away from your past. And I find very often that people who are trying to do that just kind of stepping on their own toes because the motivation is wrong. It's not a self-motivation. It's I got to get away from the other self-motivation. Can you talk to that at all?
Well, I do agree with you. I think if I were to examine my own life, I certainly started out making up for what I felt I was lacking. But in my travels and my work on myself and my self-growth, I began to discover a higher purpose. And so, again, I think it doesn't matter how you start. You know, if you start out and you're motivated by your difficult past and things that you want to overcome or you want to get above, it's fine. Just get started.
Well, what is it that gets you? I mean, a lot of people are depressed.
Yes, they are.
And if they're depressed, how do they get started? It's hard to pick yourself up.
Well,
are there keys to this? Are there tricks?
I think that it's more almost than keys. I mean, I've done a lot of work, and there are so many different types. There's therapy. There are programs, 12-step programs. There's landmark education. There are all kinds of programs, not expensive, to get a jump start. So if you're
depressed, a jump start on?
On going towards success, on setting some goals.
So are you saying that you think that being depressed is a thorough blockage to being successful? Because I know a lot of depressed executives who are successful.
Well, then again, I would say let's define success. If success to them is being, it's fine that they're depressed and they make a lot of money, then that, you know, we can say that's success. But usually people find success, they kind of define that as having a lightness of spirit and enjoying what they're doing.
And it fulfills me.
Exactly.
And I have the feeling somewhere that I'm in sync with what I am. I met a man, a thief, who's going to be listening to us today, I'm sure, who is a cab driver. And he loves driving the cabs. He said, where else can I meet so many beautiful people so often? He said, I love this work. And he's very happy with what he does. You know, and his spirit is good. His spirit is very high. So it's not exactly the work that you do or how the work is regarded.
I agree. I really agree.
So let's talk about the steps. You say the steps to success is, number one, defining what is success to you.
Correct.
What else is there?
Well, then I think it's figuring out if you're anywhere near that, if you've got any path to getting there. How would I get there? What would it mean to me? It might mean, well, anything, and even other than money. It doesn't have to mean making money. Just say your goal and your description of success is loving what you do every day. Well, then you have to figure out what do you love to do. And then you have to start choosing that as if that's my passion. For instance, I love to dance. So I took a passion test in a book. I mean, there's just so much available. There are books available that can help you. And I thought, I love to dance and I'm not dancing. So about 5 months ago, I said, I'm going to choose dancing over everything else. And I now dance 3 nights a week, 2 hours each night.
But it's not your profession.
It's not my profession, but it is such a lifting of my spirit. It actually just, although I love what I do every day of coaching people, it just added a dimension of joy and lightness and fun for me.
I understand. I am sure that I have people out there in the audience who say, I love to get stoned every day.
Claudia,
here we go. Well, then go get stoned every day and make money at it.
Well, I don't believe that getting stoned is an escape, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And so I think that goes with drinking, and now we're hearing about all these Wall Street fellows who are having sex on their lunch hour. I mean, I think we have to take a look at what are addictions versus what we really love to do.
Okay, so that's a very important point, Claudia. Sorry to interrupt you. Addictive process is usually something that a person engages in when they hate what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
An addiction is meant to calm you down, to kind of get you cooled out because you don't like what you're doing. So even though it sounds delightful that this executive on Wall Street is having sex during his lunch hour with somebody, it really doesn't, it's not very significant to him that he had sex this day and the next day and the next day. It's like he got a little discharge, he had a little feeling, and then he goes back to the same work. It's his way of dealing with that tension, and
mm-hmm.
it's, I don't even know if we call it sex, it's like relief work, and then, or it's getting a drink, or it's smoking a joint, or it's smoking cigarettes, or eating too much food. I worked in Wall Street for a number of years, and I remember the addictions were rampant, mm-hmm. It was like part of what it was down there, which is why I left it when I was a kid. So let's go to the step. The step is you want to determine what it is that you like to do. But what if success, what if your motive is money?
Well,
what if it's only money? So it doesn't really care what you do as long as you can make enough money.
Well, it's just my personal belief that money in and of itself, and I know it was a driving force for me because I grew up in a family with 6 kids, and we didn't have a lot of money. Well, sometimes we had a lot of money, but mostly we didn't have a lot of money. So I always thought money was it. And I remember reading about Diana Ross, who said she thought it was about money, and she got to a certain place in life where she had everything and anything she could possibly have, and she still did not feel fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that syndrome, where it was just get the money, and as soon as I have this, I'll be happy. As soon as I have this, I'll be happy. And I'm here to say I probably have everything I could imagine that I want. A nice car, a nice home. I have clothes. I don't have to go shopping in order to figure out what to wear for the day. I have savings. And it's not about money. But I almost had to work myself into getting those things before I actually realized it wasn't about money.
Claudia, very often teachers have come from a place where they've spent a lot of time teaching, and they are not aware or they're not conscious of the fact that the people who they're teaching come from a much further back place. Now, you, for example, have done so much significant work on uncovering yourself to yourself through therapy and development and stuff like that. So you get to a point where you're advising people, but you're advising people from a place of knowledge. I mean, I'd hate to tell the world you're a very beautiful person, but you've been here a long time. You've been here, you were in the 60s when I was around.
Right.
Right? So you have learned a lot about life, and you've challenged yourself over and over again.
That's true.
And it would almost seem to be that that would be a key ingredient, that if you don't challenge yourself emotionally, if you don't know who you are psychologically, you're kind of like lost. You're in a, and so therefore you will hold groups and teach people, some of whom have had no insight at all.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think it's possible to become successful with no insight at all? With no mirrors in your life?
No, but I think life is a mirror. And sometimes people just keep bumping into it. You know, it's like the door, the glass door, and they just keep walking into it and walking into it. And some people, the crack opens up a little, and then they discover, oh, you know, I'm doing this a little differently. I learned this, and I'm doing it a little differently. And they feel that success, and it just spurs them on to do it more. But I think you have to have insight. You know, people all around will tell you, if you ask them, if you ask the five closest people in your life, what do I do that bothers you? Or how do you think that I can improve myself? You will have a plan right there. I guarantee you, if those people are honest with you, you can make a plan from that information.
If you ask your mother, how can I be better, and she says you should pay attention to me more often, does that become part of your plan? I think you should not ask the people that close to you.
I think you're absolutely right. Mothers and fathers, I would leave out. Maybe even brothers and sisters, because
maybe even children and husbands and wives.
Because you come from that.
Ask your husband, how would I be a better person? You know, be a better wife.
Exactly.
But if you do ask people who are friends.
Yes.
And actually, if you were lucky enough to have a friendship with your mate, which would mean you get an honest response.
Yes.
What do you think are the five things about me, is that what you would say?
Mm-hmm.
About me that you think I would better me if I changed?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. So why would their opinion have such meaning? Because they're your reflection? Because you may not see yourself, but they can?
Right. We have blocks. You know, we sort of, I think, people walk around with kind of, you know, the horses that take us around in the carriages on the street, they have those blinders on. And I think that that's how most people walk around. We're in our own world. You know, I was having a conversation this morning with one of the agents in my office, and we were talking about Obama getting out there with the people and how insulated Washington is. That, you know, everybody listens to everybody else, but they're very separated from what's really going on in the world, which is why he insisted on his BlackBerry, which is why he goes out and he talks to the people to find out what's happening. He's not just listening to one set of voices. So when we're in a circle, you know, it's like our family, and we just hear that set of voices, it's the same voices that we grew up with, so it's very hard to move out and get new information. So I think you're absolutely right. It is asking people outside of that circle and then listening. How do they view us? What can I do?
Could you give me an example of five things that a person may say about themselves or may find out about themselves?
Well, I had someone call me from my past, actually, and ask me this question. And just for privacy's sake, I won't mention the person's name. But he said, what could I do different? And, you know, I was very honest with him, and it was a huge breakthrough for him. What I felt about him was that a lot of his conversation was sarcasm or jokes, and often at other people's expense. I think so many times we don't realize, people don't realize when they're talking to one another, that the things that they say could hurt another person. So if you ask someone honestly, are there things that I do that hurt you? You might learn something about yourself, a big area to work on correcting.
You know, it's an interesting thing because people love a positive spirit in a person. They want to see a positive, affirmative spirit. They don't like negativity in general. However, sarcasm and jokes generally touches a different place in people. And what it touches is when you do sarcasm or jokes, you're in effect telling people, I'm going to fool you. You see, the way that humor works is to trick the mind. it tricks the mind into an unexpected answer, you know, and it gives you something that, oh, that's what makes it funny, because you didn't expect the answer. But the very nature of that means that there's a deception involved. You were thinking one thing and another thing appeared. And strangely enough, by being somebody who tells jokes, you engender a distrust in people. You know, it's a funny thing about, you know, we've learned about comedians, that comedians are always standing outside, looking in, because they're not usually inside. But they're on the outside looking at people. So one of the things you want to do, and this, you know, luckily you brought this up, is I think in an attempt to be positive with people, sarcasm and jokes is not the way to do it.
Mm.
Nobody wants to see what they call a wise ass. You know what I mean? I mean, people may want it, but it's not something you trust. And I think trust is a very important factor when you're looking to employ people on your ladder of success. You know, when you need people to help you out with it.
I agree, absolutely. I mean, if we take someone, many of the comedians have had very difficult lives. I mean, I don't think it's speaking out of context to say that Richard Pryor is a person of that example, and who's had a terrible, terrible life. And when I listen to him, it is very negative, and it's sarcasm. And he is very funny if he's not, you know, making the joke at someone who's in the room. But usually where there's smoke, there's fire as well. I think when people are sarcastic, there's always some truth behind it. So they might say something out of hand in a sarcastic way to you, and then you're always getting that little message that they actually are criticizing you, rather than saying to the person, well, this is how I feel when you do such and such, which would be an adult way of operating with a partner or a friend.
One of the key ingredients that I've always used in my finding people to work with is this trust issue. Now, trust, I would make a general rule that if anybody is applying for a job, do nothing that reflects, that might make the person not trust you. Don't complain about your last boss because the person thinks you're going to complain about them. Don't criticize somebody else because the person knows that you're now being critical. Don't arrive late and excuse yourself, because that person's not going to trust you. I actually interviewed a man the other day who, when I was in the middle of interviewing him, he said to me, I have to go put a quarter in my car or put money in my meter. And I said, oh, okay, where did you park? And here I am on 6th Avenue. He said, I parked on 11th Avenue, but I took the bus over, but it'll only take me 10 minutes to get over there and back. And me not knowing how, he showed up an hour and 20 minutes later. And he didn't think, he was just wondering why I wasn't so responsive to him. But you see, without knowing it,
right,
he was telling me, I'm not trustworthy.
Right.
I'm not trustworthy, you know. I'm not. And when people talk about how they beat out systems, when they talk about how smart they were, that they got on the bus but they didn't have to pay.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You don't want to do that when an employer. So some of the clues we have in what you're bringing up with sarcasm and jokes is be the best you can, make sure you don't violate the fact that, you know, even if you are sneaky, don't let it show. You know, don't let that be seen, because that's not working in your behalf. What are the clues do people have about the way they present themselves? What do you think about appearance? How important is it?
Oh, well, very important. And I think it's just a matter of cleanliness and being neat. I mean, I've met many, many people of many different looks and many different races, and everybody has a different way of being. But cleanliness, appropriateness, also trying to figure out what is the milieu, what is the environment, what am I going for a job?
Well, let's start off with the cleanliness, the appearance, okay?
Okay.
I mean, appearance as far as cleanliness goes, I think you make a very good point. Because you and I were both around when people were wearing all kinds of funny things, right?
Yes.
And long, long hair, you know, that would go down to your back. But there was a difference between the person who appeared disheveled and dirty and long-haired and the person who appeared okay and long-haired. And the difference was always something to do with I hate the word cleanliness because it sounds like a pejorative that, you know, you're dirty.
Right.
But it's attention to some part of yourself.
Yes.
And I want to know that you attend to yourself. I want to know that you will... But I want to know that if the office was dirty, you would pick up a piece of dirt on the floor.
Yes.
I want to know that you're not going to be sloppy around me. So it's important, no matter what your job is, that I think you're saying cleanliness without, you don't have to necessarily be in a suit and tie.
Correct. You have to just know the job that you're interviewing for. For instance, if you're going into a corporate environment, you want to check it out. How do people dress? Even if they have casual days and you go in on a casual day and their main attire is a suit and tie, I would wear a suit and tie. I remember my first real job was at KLM Airlines. And up until then, I had worn jeans and sweaters. And it was totally appropriate. I was working for an advertising firm and everyone dressed down. But I knew enough to find out what did they wear at that airline. And literally, on my way to the interview, I mean, it was very young, remember.
Wasn't it a blue uniform?
Yeah, they did have a blue uniform.
Right.
But I actually stopped, and I remembered this on the way down because I was in my 20s. I was 25. I had moved to New York, and I didn't have much money. And I went to Alexander's then, stopped off, got a little suit, and went down to 47th Street for the interview.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, even then, now, this is one of those things about telling the truth. But there is an element of this in success. So I'm bringing it up for a point. I really did not type well. And at that time, I was a secretary. And I went into the office, and I was gung-ho because I'm always kind of that positive person, and interviewed for the job. And he did say there was some typing. And I just was, you know, not a good typist. And I was so nervous. So he didn't give me a test. But I got the job, and he started giving me things to type. Now, I really didn't type well, so I used to sit at my typewriter and just pretend like I was typing. But 5 o'clock would roll around, and I would sit there and hunt and peck and get those letters perfectly. And it didn't take me long before I could actually type. So the lesson in there sometimes is that a successful person will project that they're going to figure out what it is that they need to do. Even though they don't do it well, they take a job with some percentage of it that they need to learn. And I'm getting a little off the track here.
No, but I like this a lot. Is it okay to tell that? Because when people tell me, no, but I could learn, thank you very much. I'd rather you knew already.
Well, here's my rule. No 80% of the job. 20% should be a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd be boring for me if I took a job and I knew how to do everything. The spark for me is having that 20% that I have to figure out or learn.
My guest is Claudia Fox. And by the way, in case you have to go, Claudia Fox has a website, degreesforsuccess.net.
degreesofsuccess.net.
And we're going to be continuing. We're talking about success in general. We're talking about how people succeed, and we're talking about if there is any additional stresses now. Now, let's say that we were not in the environment of the last financial crisis, mm-hmm. but we were in a regular environment. Would your rules would be quite different than they would be today, wouldn't they?
Well, today is a huge stress. I think today people just have to get a job. I mean, it's that simple for me. And I know I've heard people say, well, I don't want to take a job under, you know, my earning income, and I'm much better than that. And all in all, I say keep busy, because I think if you're not busy, that is a way to get depressed. I used to coach men, mostly men. There were some women who had lost their jobs after 20 years and were looking. And if they weren't busy, they got depressed. So I say I'd rather have you a little depressed in doing a job that may not make you the same kind of money, But keep busy, and you never know where that can lead you. If you're up and you're going to work and you're telling people, I'm looking for a better job, you can take a job that's not your job, and you just don't know where it's going to lead you. But you need to be out and in life.
Out and in the working life.
Out and in the working life.
You know, it's one of the real disadvantages today of the high unemployment rate is the number of people who are on unemployment insurance. Mm. Because eventually it gets to a point where you give up looking.
Right.
And you're getting the money, and it's almost a disservice for the level that it doesn't keep you inspired.
Right.
Whereas any job, any kind of work would keep some kind of inspiration going, but our society kind of takes away your unemployment rights when you get a job at a lesser fee.
Yes.
So it's kind of a funny system. I met a man the other day who said he was let go from his job, and they were just cutting back, and he immediately applied for entry level. Now, he was an executive, and he said, and they said, we're cutting back on our executive salaries, and he said, well, give me an entry level salary. He said, because I have some experience. He actually went in with an entry-level salary to hold on to his job, and from there he got increases again, but he just didn't want to be out of work.
Good for him.
You know, he just negotiated himself right back in when they said, we're cutting back. He said, at what level don't you cut back? Well, we need, you know, a receptionist. Good, I'll be the receptionist. He stayed in the company, believing that that company is going to recover, and when it recovers, he'll be getting his righteous position back.
Brilliant. That's brilliant.
Armand DeMille here with The Positive Mind with Claudia Fox, talking about steps to success. And right now we're talking about some of the ways that people use to try to keep ahead. And we've talked about being able to present yourself. We've talked about being somewhat sincere. But watch out for that sincerity. Don't make it depressed. Don't go in there like you're a drag. Remember, energy is key. When you walk into a room and you drag the energy out of the people, they're not going to like it as much. What other keys do we have, Claudia?
Well, I wanted to just add to that, because remember, the experience they have with you is what makes it. I mean, when you go in to apply for a position, you're really starting a relationship with that person. And how they feel about you is whether or not they're going to find a place for you. I've had experiences where I've gone in and there were no jobs. But they liked my energy, and they liked what I did, and they liked what I said. And they've actually created positions for me, or given me a position that shouldn't be my position, but I started out there and moved on to something bigger and better. There's another point I wanted to make. You brought something up, and the other thing that people can do is they can volunteer. There's so much to do. There's so much work to do. It keeps you busy. Again, you never know where it's going to lead you. So if you're on unemployment and you're saying, well, you know, every day I get up and I want to go back to sleep, think about how you can help another person. There's a whole spiritual way of looking at things in the world. What you give out is what you get back. So if you're out there and you're participating, you just don't know where that's going to lead. You know, it could be somebody who has a sister who has a job for you. You need to get up out from under the covers and be out there.
I'm speaking with Claudia Fox. Claudia Fox has two things going for her. One is she's a master of real estate and has entered that real estate world and found success in there, and I'm going to talk to her about that as well. And she's also a coach who teaches people how to succeed. Now, on your website, you have your book available, don't you?
I do.
And what is it? Where do they go to? They go to the...
Well, my website is really very simply laid out for those of you who, hesitate or say, I'm not a computer person, I don't know how to do that. It's so simple. You just go to www.degreesofsuccess.net, and remember, it's net. And it's just as plain as day. There's different pages. I know. I go on there every day and just look at it. You know, I'm so excited.
You marvel at your website.
I just love my website.
Well, she's got website narcissism. Listen, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, my friends, we're going to continue with Claudia Fox. We'll be right back. And this is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind, where my guest in the studio, Claudia Fox. Claudia Fox, who has got two, well, she's been very successful. You started off, you're very successful in real estate now.
Yes.
You know, what do you do? Tell people.
Well, I'm a vice president and manager of Coldwell Banker Previews International, mm-hmm. and I manage the Upper West Side office on 76th and Columbus.
So you know all about real estate, and you know about what's happening, and you know about how people find things and where they go and what the market's all about, and you're in the middle of that. Do you feel like there's a threat?
I do lapse into that. From time to time, probably a little part of every day goes into that part of my mind, and I work very diligently to keep myself out of that place.
Well, let me ask you something about this. Is just a little side on the real estate market. When I speak to landlord of a building that I'm in, when I say, hey, why are you trying to raise my rent? How about lowering it? He says, oh, no, rents are really going up. And I say to him, wait a minute. So there's one perspective. And then when you try to go out and rent an apartment, you hear rents are falling everywhere, but then you find that you're only being shown these very expensive apartments. What's the key to finding what you want? I mean, the person who is presenting something to you is, I'm sorry to say, almost always a liar. They're always trying to deceive you.
You mean the real estate agent?
No, the real estate agent, the landlord. It's such concern that you have to have about, you know, can I trust what's going on here?
I truly understand that. I will say that there is sort of a reputation for real estate agents, especially in the city. However, I really work at not having that in my office. When I first started as a manager in the office, I looked around and I saw who I thought was going to be positive and who was going to be a pull. And I did let go of a group of people. But the rest of the people that I have there, really, we formed a team. We work well together. And I think they're honest. I wouldn't have somebody working for me if I thought that they weren't honest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you may have that,
mm-hmm.
but how do you, as somebody who needs the services of these people, determine?
Well, that is a difficult thing.
Because I'm sorry to interrupt. Remember, the art of the agent is to make you trust me. Any agent that does anything is saying, they're like politicians, I want you to trust me.
Mm-hmm.
That's their word, and that's their skill, that's their art. How do you, as a consumer, know who could be trusted and who could not be trusted?
Well, I think people trip themselves up. I really do. And if you are listening to what they say and have a trust in your own intuition, I think you figure it out. I really do.
You know, you're really right. Like the man who told me that he parked all the way over on 11th Avenue.
Right.
I mean, that was enough for me.
Right.
That's enough. Uh-huh. I understand. That's your judgment. And then we never had to talk about it again. We didn't have to mention it, but I knew this was a lapse in judgment. So people, as they speak to you, they very often will reveal themselves. And you don't have to challenge it. You just need to observe it.
Exactly.
Now, this is also good when looking for jobs, to be able to observe and not challenge. To see the different things that you see and not get, you know, too bent out of shape about it.
You know, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that to come from a place of confidence, even though what's going on around you is going on around you and you may have fear, you have to act as if. So when you go in for that interview, they're interviewing you, but you're interviewing them as well. And my son is buying a car. He's 22 years old. And we had a conversation the other night about negotiation. And I said, get two cars. This is the best way to negotiate. Get two cars. And then you're not invested in one if you lose it. And you're a better negotiator. And I think that's the same with jobs. Go on many job interviews. Interview them. I have a kind of a formula which would take a little too long to do
Let's try it as best you got. Let's hear the formula.
So the formula is to first ask, what the job is about. Let me back up a minute. I always like everyone to have a 60-second commercial about themselves. So you work on that. You pick out the last two jobs, what the titles were, and then something that you did for that company, a wow factor, anything that you think would impress the person that you're interviewing with. So you have this 60-second commercial. And then you say to them, you know, I have...
Let's not go too quick on that. Now, what's the components of the 60-second commercial? My name is...
Well, no, they already know your name.
Okay, so what do you want to present? You present yourself, hi, nice to meet you. And they say, well, what are you looking for? And you say, well, I am. And is this where your commercial takes place? Where do you drop the commercial?
Almost every interview, the person who's interviewing says, tell me about yourself.
Good.
There's almost always that sentence.
And that's where your commercial is waiting.
That's where your commercial is waiting.
So what do? You practice it and tell your wife your commercial,
yes,
and tell your husband your commercial. And
You have that down pat.
Tell your dog and your cat.
Anyone who will listen.
So that I can do it. Now, and the components of the commercial are... This is who I am. I'm a student of, what do you do? You know what I've seen some people do, which were very interesting? They go on websites and they find out the personal interests, or they find some interest that's a focus of the organization or the executives in the organization, and they focus on that, and they actually write their resume to focus on the interest of the company. So, for example, if I was hiring somebody, and I wanted somebody to be interested in psychology, but that person was really an accountant, they would look and they would see, oh, psychology, and they'd rewrite their resume.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's smart.
Interest in psychology. So right before they come in.
Right. I think that you have to be true to yourself, because you could get tripped up if you're really not interested in psychology.
Oh, but let's say it's one of your interests.
Yes,
good.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So don't put down anything false. But now,
right,
let's start at the beginning. Do you think a resume should be tailored for the employer?
Yes.
Interesting science.
I do.
Nowadays with computers, it's very easy.
It's very you can find out anything about anyone. It's just amazing.
But it's also interesting to drop and, you know, to write different things and have different resumes that you present.
Absolutely.
Okay. So
I've always had a resume that was geared toward the job I was going for.
Okay, so one is gear resume towards the job. The second is go in with your 60-second commercial.
You will almost always get the opportunity. Remember that the person who's interviewing you may not necessarily be a person who knows how to interview. Sometimes they're more nervous than you are, and they try to give you the ball until they get comfortable. And you can help them. You can help them through that by having your 60-second commercial. And then you can help them by my standard line is... I've done a lot of things, but I would like to spend this time telling you what you would like to know about me. So can you tell me what's important about this job? What's important to you about this job?
What do you mean, what's important about the job, or what's important about me for this job?
Right. What's important to you that you know that you have to have for that job? What are you thinking is important to you about this job? So that I can tell you where my background meets up with that.
Okay, so let's say you're going for employment as a short order cook.
Okay.
All right, you go to a restaurant and he says, okay, and you say, well, what are you looking for? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
What are you really looking for? What is it that you're looking for?
Well, what's important to you? Because I might say to you,
what are the words?
I've read the job description. But what's really important to you about this job? What do you need?
You're saying that to the employer.
Yes. So say you're the person who's interviewing me. Then I would say to you, you know, I read that job description, and I understand that you need me to, cook certain things every evening. But what's really important to you about that job? What do you really need from me?
Wow.
And you will get different answers.
Beautiful.
I need somebody who's quick. Mm-hmm. We have a tremendous turnover in our restaurant, so I need somebody who's very, very quick. I need somebody who brings their own recipes, you might say, to me. Someone who's going to add to it. I've got the standard recipes. I want some exciting new ones. Now I'm beginning to find out what's important to you.
Well, what's beautiful about that, that I love so much, Claudia, is that by reversing the roles that way, by reversing the interviewer becomes the interviewee, you know, the interviewee becomes the interviewer. By asking that question, you're not putting a person really badly on a spot.
Right.
Because you're giving them a chance to say what they're trying to observe the whole time. And at the same time, you're showing that you have the intelligence to ask that question.
Right.
It's a good thing.
Right.
Hey, I like that. We've got step three.
Right.
Right? Okay, give me more tricks.
Okay, so while they're talking, you're making a mental note. Okay, at the restaurant Top Chef, I developed my own recipes. And I worked as a short order cook in the diner, and it was fast moving. And so you're thinking of these things, and you're ticking them off in your mind. And you can even take a pad of paper with you and just put a little mark as you go along, and because you can always refer to it. And then when the person is done telling you what they're looking for, you can say, you know, when I was a short order cook, we had to get those dinners in and out so quickly. I can do this for you. And at Top Chef, I'm just making that name up. At Top Chef, I developed my own recipes, and I'm so excited about them, and I would love to bring them to you. I would love the opportunity to bring them to you. So pretty soon, you're just telling the person exactly what they want to hear.
And they've already told you what they
want
to know.
What they want to know, exactly.
Good. Okay, so step three is listening. But, you know, there's another thing about listening that I think is important. I even noticed it with you. Every now and then, a person will give you a facial expression that will tell you if they approve or disapprove of what you're speaking about, you know? So watch for grimaces. Watch for, like, if I say you and I are talking, we talk about, hey, remember Studio 54? You go, oh, yeah, right? But you could just as well have made me a face showing you disapprove. And that would be information for me not to go in that area. So I think one of the things that you do, if you have an observation, don't speak it. Don't drop it on a person. Don't expose a person. Nobody likes to have themselves exposed by your observation. So as sharp as you are, don't say to the person if they grimace, I see you didn't like Studio 54. Just don't go there.
Right.
Observe it and maybe reverse yourself later. You know, but don't necessarily bring to somebody's attention something that they're hiding from you. But once you become an observer, like most of our audience who listens, once you see these things and you see the clues, don't necessarily feed them back, but register them so that you could work with them.
I agree.
Okay, next step. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, no, I want to say also, try to keep an open body language. I mean, I'm trying to think of the word, I've lost it, neurolinguistics, which I took a course on, which is another level of moving your body with the person's body. But for the most part, if you don't know how to do that, I would try to stay open. Oftentimes people have, they wrap their arms around themselves, and it just shows people how nervous you are or how insecure you're feeling. So even if you have to hold the arms of the chair, you know, keep your body language open and have good eye contact. But you don't want to, I've actually had someone come in and interview with me, and his eye contact was so intense that, you know, I thought maybe he was a mass murderer or something.
Right, you got
there.
Uncomfortable.
I got very uncomfortable. I thought there's something wrong with this.
You want to be not afraid to look in their eyes, but
right.
You don't want to be so intense that you look like you're staring.
Right. And sometimes you can look at the middle of their forehead. You know, you can move from eye to eye.
Mm-hmm.
You want it to be comfortable and natural. So that's just an aside. So the next step is to ask them questions about people who had the job before. So you might say, did you have a chef in this position before? And if you were to say yes, I would say to you, well, what did you like about that chef? What didn't you like about that chef? So I would ask questions surrounding it, because remember, I'm interviewing you as well, and I want to know how you view the person before. So just like you said, I don't want to badmouth my past employer, you're going to wonder if somebody starts saying, oh, that guy was just awful, blah, 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 blah. You want to think twice. Now, he's really saying something unkind about the person before, and he doesn't have to do that. There are nice ways to put things. That means he may be speaking about you when you're gone like that.
And yes, and you know, it's beautiful because this is what I recommend people do on dates. You know, when you're dating somebody,
mm-hmm.
What happened to your last relationship? You know, and the person tells you, well, you know, she was just too hysterical and she was too... And what happened to the one before it? Well, she was... And you're going to hear all about the person, and you're going to understand everything about them and the kind of conflict you're going to have with them in the future if you continue. But if instead, when they answer you about their past relationships, if they honor their past relationships, even if the other person was wacky, right?
Yes.
If, you know, if you had somebody who was really terrible with you, if you honor them by not talking about them badly to somebody who's a stranger, there's something about it that speaks well about yourself as well.
Yes. Yes, okay. Absolutely.
I need to ask this question about mm-hmm. attractive women, and I'm sorry. It's
fire away.
Well, it's that question. It's that question. If you're an attractive woman, and I'm sure you've been through it because you are, how do you know when somebody's just hitting on you or not? How do you know? I mean, how do you know when you're just getting, when this whole thing is just, you know, a seduction in some way?
Well, you know. You just know. And I have had that in past jobs. I've had sexual harassment. At the time, I was too young to know you could do anything about it. I honestly, even at this stage, would not do anything about it. I mean, I would perhaps talk to the person about, you know, what they were doing.
Well, let's not say at the level of harassment. The level of harassment is one thing.
Okay.
But a person interviews you, and they're kind of nothing better to do with their time, and they're enjoying looking at you, and they're, you know, you kind of get a feeling that they're stringing you along because, and you know, well, if you're really nice, maybe we'll have this position for you and stuff like that. But it's not harassment yet, you know, just kind of really wasting your time because they're really just interested in you physically.
Well, I don't look at anything that goes on in the interview as a waste of time because I'm always mm-hmm. practicing for the next interview. But I have closing questions. And when I start with the closing questions, I get very clear about where they're at and where they're not. And I don't let people string me along.
Closing as in after 4 hours? Closing as
No, I would never be at an interview for 4 hours unless they were moving me from person to person.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
taking
yeah.
me in to meet another group.
But closing as in what? What would a closing statement be? Questions.
A closing question would be, would you hire me today knowing what you know? And if not, why not?
Wow. Okay.
And then I would find out. And then if they told me that there was something that they thought I was lacking, then I would have an opportunity again to go back into my past and see if there was something I could bring up. Or I could bring up the 20% rule, the 80-20, and say to them, I always like 20%, you know, as a challenge. And would you be okay if I have 80% of the job function down, that I learn that 20%? I'd be more than happy to do that, and I think I'm capable of that. Knowing that, would you hire me? So I keep putting it back to them. And even at the end, if they say, well, now I have to talk to someone else, I say to them, okay, well, I'd like to call you next Tuesday or Wednesday. Which would be better for you? And then if they say, oh, no, we have to have a meeting, it'll be 3 weeks, you find that out. And if they let you call back next Tuesday or Wednesday, then you find that out. So it's always good to put something out there and get some final on it.
And get some feedback. You know, I often wonder about the people in the arts who can go on a stage and do an audition for, as a dancer or an actor or a singer, and, okay, we'll call you, and they let you off the stage. How do you go through that? And they do. They do. They become immune to it, you know? But we'll call you, you know, and you look for the callbacks. But you're saying take control of that situation.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
Take control of that situation. I don't know if actors and actresses and artists could do it. I wonder if they could. if they could spit back, you know, hey, what are you looking for? Right?
Well, I'm sure that the person who's, you know, interviewing them would probably be a little shocked, and they might even like it.
I can't imagine why they wouldn't like it, because if they didn't like it, then they probably didn't like you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So if they like you when you ask the question, they would only like you more.
Exactly.
If they were interested in
you're
you
right.
when you asked the question, it would just kind of, oh, this person's even more interesting.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Right. There's one more point I want to get in there, because
sure.
after you ask them questions about the past person, it's also a great idea to ask them, who do they promote? Where did that person go? Did they leave? What if I do a good job? Where can I go? You know, what's ahead? Can I move ahead? Can I, if it's a chef, can I become a top chef? If it's an increase in income, how do you do that in your restaurant or your company? So you want to find out where you can possibly go in that company. And then I go to the closing lines.
And what are your closing lines?
The closing lines that I just said.
All right. Now, follow up on, you know, I'm going to tell you a little secret that I learned when I was younger. I'm sure they don't do it anymore. Someone asked me about how do you find out what you want to do. And we had this thing we used to do. And I know, Claudia, it's probably the first time you've heard this. You buy two New York Times. Now, this is when New York Times was the only way you could find a job. You get two New York Times, not one, but two. You get the Sunday Times. You get the help wanted section of the New York Times. And you cut out every job that you could possibly do. Now, the reason you have two is because it's two sides of a page. You might be on one side of a page, and the other time you'll be on the other side. You cut out every job you could possibly do. Possibly, no matter what it is, you know? Even if it's, you know, you may ignore Pope. You know, if there's an ad for a Pope, I can't do that job. You may ignore something, but every job you could possibly do, and then you build a pyramid. And this pyramid is fascinating. You have it down, and you go, oh, here's all the jobs at the bottom that I don't want to do, but I could do. And you build the pyramid up, and you wind up shifting things up and around the pyramid. And I've always found it fascinating, because you find out that you're so capable of so much. There's so much we don't know that we have the capacity to do. I mean, short order cook may work. You know, just consider all of the alternatives and then work yourself up to that thing. Have you ever heard anybody doing it? Well, we used to do it when I was younger, and it was a teaching tool.
No, but if you'll let me, I'll steal that for my
sure.
next workshop. I think it's fabulous.
Sure, give me credit.
I will give you credit.
Absolutely. All right, so now follow up after you apply for a job where you're trying to find something you want. How do you follow up? Do you call?
Well, there are different ways to do that. You can fax over something, a follow-up letter, and then what I often would tell the people that were in my workshops that I worked with was then to make up something else, like a short paragraph, and call them and say, did you get my follow-up letter? And they'll, you know, they may have stacks, and they will find it. They will actually find your follow-up letter, and you say, you know, could you keep that out, because I've just got one more paragraph about myself that I want the person to know about. And I'd like to fax that over. Would you just staple it? And, you know, usually what happens is they staple it and they put it on top of the pile.
Good trick. Good trick. You know, another thing I was always curious about, never been done, but I've always wondered, if someone were to come to an office and go to an office and see that the person liked something or other, because the office will always tell you, they may like colors, they may collect something, they may see something, they may have something, you know. I'm always curious. They may have certain music playing in the waiting room, whatever it is. I'm always curious why an interviewee doesn't send a follow-up gift. You know, a little gift, a small gift that shows, I noticed around your office that you were, you know, you had things with butterflies on them. And I thought you might like this keychain. And I hope you're considering me for the job. Because we call these transitional objects, you know, and these little objects, once you get them from some people, you kind of, they're connected to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it something that's encouraged, or is this another workshop idea?
That is another workshop idea. And the thing that I always did, there's a place called Cookies by Design. Mm-hmm. And I used to have little foot cookies made up. And I would send those, and I'd say, just trying to get my foot in the door, Claudia.
Oh, beautiful.
And you could eat them.
Right.
They were pretty big foot cookies on a stick. And they sent them out. But I, you know, once they're gone, they're gone. But, you know, the stomach is a place that, you know, it grabs people, so that's always a nice thing.
Well, one of the things we learned about a long time ago is something that, believe it or not, came out of Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler, which is about people stealing things. Very often people leave things around for people to steal and take, because the object is, once they steal and take something, they're connected to you in some way. Hmm. So this whole concept of transitional objects was even used as a way of manipulating people into staying connected. And I think anything, like music, like in your interview, oh, do you like this kind of music? Any kind of thing you could get out of your interviewer. And then send something over. It may be a $5 thing. It may be a $10 CD. It could mean a lot.
I love the idea. I absolutely love it. And now you can burn your own CDs, so you could really make up something.
I would suggest that burning your own CD probably wouldn't get you as far as buying a person's
CD.
You know what I mean?
Understand.
Because it's the look of it.
Yeah.
The look of it.
That's
I like
true.
To see you put yourself out there. You know, most CDs nowadays cost you about as much as round-trip car fare.
Right.
So listen, this is Claudia Fox. We have to be going. This is Armand DeMille. We can continue this, and we're going to have to continue this with another show, Claudia. It went so fast.
Well, I loved being here, and I loved talking to you. Very, very stimulating.
Let's get your website again.
It's www.degreesofsuccess.net. Remember the net.
And if people wanted to contact you, they would just go to Degrees of Success.
Yes, there's email. There's all kinds of ways to get blog, email contact.
Didn't you say something about the library thing?
Yes, but that will be on my webpage. I just don't have that set in place. It'll be about 3 weeks or so at the White Plains Library.
And there's going to be workshops for people who lost their job recently,
yes,
right?
Yes, free.
Great. Thanks for being with us, Claudia.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Armand DeMille, you can hear a copy of this program on thepositivemind.com. Do send me an email.